Two for Tuesday, man. Yeah. This is a classic Two for Tuesday artist. Kathy requested The Doors. I certainly didn't. I can't stand The Doors. Jim Morrison was a buffoon. All right. Two for Tuesday, your requests. Yeah. Okay. So, now, you guys weren't, Vic, you were born, but you weren't here in 1979. You weren't here in Chicago in 1979.
No. California at that time.
Right. And Dan and Esmeralda were not yet a part of the universe.
Not yet.
Now, when did you become aware, like I'll start with Dan. Dan, when did you become aware of Disco Demolition, that the event that took place 37 years ago tonight?
I want to say it was also an anniversary, and Tim Weigel was showing footage of it on the CBS 2 News one night, marking the anniversary of Disco Demolition.
Yeah. Well, the anniversary every year since, mm-hmm. for 37 years, they do reports on it. Well, now Dahl's finally opening his mouth because he's trying to sell a book. he's always pretty quiet about it, but he and Dave Hoekstra put a book together, and now he's showing up all over the place. He's doing lots of press now. But, yeah, so it was Tim Weigel. Yeah, you got to love Tim. Tim was great, man.
Yep.
He was the best.
Wearing a bright yellow suit, if I remember correctly.
Do you know that?
Surprisingly.
Do you know his son?
Rafer?
Yeah. I worked with him at the Jewels.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. He was in the produce department. He was one of the guys that I would go down and talk to while the other person was standing upstairs waiting for me to check in the back on the milk. And I'd be downstairs talking to Rafer, laughing. Rafer's a great guy. He does a great job. All right, so you became aware, like, as a kid, they did an anniversary thing on the news. What about you, Esmeralda? Do you remember becoming aware at all of Disco Demolition?
No, I don't know in childhood, but I used to work at The Loop
with
Johnny B. So at that
time, baby, my pants are off.
Yes. But around that time was, you know, I interned there with promotions and stuff like that. So in that time, I think I was hipped to the Disco Demolition.
I don't think you could work at The Loop and not know about Disco Demolition.
Right. I mean, if no one would tell you, listeners would surely tell you.
Absolutely. Now, Vic, you were in California. When you came to Chicago, did you ever find out about, when did you first become aware of Disco
Speaking
Demolition?
Honestly, I did not. I wasn't aware of it until I got here. But I'll add to that, I wasn't really a baseball fan until I moved to Chicago in the late 90s. So.
Yeah, I mean, for a while, nationwide, it was much more of a baseball story, a baseball-angled story, because the way that they would do the story outside of Chicago, I mean, in Chicago it was entirely different. The way it was perceived, the way it was reported, the way it happened was not really a sports-related story. But outside of Chicago, it was a sports-related story that would fall into the category of, that we've talked about this before, terrible promotions at sporting events. Like, what was it? Dime Beers in Cleveland, right? That's probably gone down in history as the worst of all time. It was like, it was Dime Beers, right, Dan? It was Dime Beers, and then everybody got blitzed and started whipping stuff. And from what I understand, a lot of the players wouldn't go back out on the field because they were, like, in fear of their lives because everybody was completely annihilated on Dime Beers.
Right. 10-cent beer night at the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah. That's considered possibly the worst promotion. And if you were to take a list, you know, like I'm sure there are articles all over the internet about the list of the worst sports promotions of all time, Disco Demolition is going to be on that list. That's the angle that they went with. Let me read a little bit of something that Phil Vitale wrote in the Tribune about it. Comiskey Park had seen more than its share of oddball promotions, what with White Sox owner Bill Veeck's penchant for colorful, a scoreboard that lit up and exploded with fireworks, the offbeat, players having their players wear shorts, and more. Nothing compared to Disco Demolition Night. Staged at Comiskey on a Thursday evening in the summer of 1979, anyone who brings a disco album to the game, which was a doubleheader between the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers, would be admitted for 98 cents. Because, the Loop was 98. We didn't have digital stuff then. It wasn't 97.9. It was 98. And you would get in for 98 cents. So, between games, radio personality Steve Dahl, then the morning man at rock station WLUP, would blow up the disco albums with fireworks. Dahl, who had been fired from DAI, WDAI, when that station switched to an all-disco format, had garnered national recognition for his crusade against what he called disco dystrophy. Comiskey was filled to capacity. The official attendance was more than 59,000. An estimated 15,000 fans milled outside the park. After the first game, which the Sox lost 4-1, Dahl ceremoniously blew up a crate filled with disco records. All was orderly till that point, but as Dahl finished, thousands of fans stormed onto the field, tearing up clumps of sod, burning signs, knocking over batting cages, flinging records around like frisbees. Police arrested 37 people. By the time order was restored, the grounds were little more than a grassy moonscape, and the second game was canceled, later awarded to the Tigers by forfeit. Later, some blamed Dahl, some blamed Vec. Howard Cosell even blamed the then White Sox announcer Harry Carey, saying that Harry contributed to the quote-unquote carnival atmosphere. Harry was like, "What? What the hell's going on?" A handful of rowdies had taken advantage of the situation, for which stadium security was woefully unprepared. "I never thought that I, a stupid disc jockey, could draw 70,000 people to a disco demolition," Dahl said. "Unfortunately, some of our followers got a little carried away. That was the last anti-disco rally for WLUP, but it brought national attention to Dahl and established him as a radio superstar in Chicago." All true. Now, if anybody went or has memories, 312-981-7200. Steve Dahl was a radio, still a radio hero of mine. And I was listening to him constantly when I was a kid. And then I listened to him when he was on WDAI. And DAI was a rock station. And, the competitor was, at the time, there was WDAI and there was The Loop. And they played rock. Not classic rock, because at that time it was rock. It's classic rock now. But at that time they were playing music that was only maybe 2-3 years old and new. Now the stuff that was being played in 1979 is considered classic rock. Hell, Pearl Jam is now considered classic rock. So I used to listen to him on DAI. I was a member of the Insane Coho Lips, which was Steve Dahl's like army of listeners, the Insane Coho Lips. And I was a fan of his. I just loved him. I thought he was the funniest thing in the world. And I was a listener of Steve and then Steve and Gary for many, many years. So as a huge fan of Steve Dahl, as a person who listened to rock and loved Sabbath and Zeppelin and Jethro Tull and all these classic rock bands, I was on the side of Steve Dahl with Disco Demolition. Now, secretly, I wouldn't tell my friends that I enjoyed disco, but I did, but I never said anything because it was uncool among the burnouts that I hung out with to actually like disco. I had a Disco Sucks t-shirt, as did many, many people that I knew. And it was a big deal to the Disco Demolition thing was huge among I was 14 years old. I was a 14-year-old kid listening to Steve Dahl, loving rock and roll, and saying that I hated disco. So I was like, I got to go. This guy's like one of my radio heroes. They're going to blow up disco records. It's going to be fantastic. So I went. I went with three people, and we went down to Comiskey, and I took from my parents' record collection, I took their soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever. Because you had to bring a disco record to get in for 98 cents. So I took my parents' Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, which I actually replaced because I brought it there, and I guess it blew up. I'm assuming they put it in the bin with all the other thousands of records. Went down there. And it was my friend Dan Long, who I grew up with, not the one that works here, his older brother, and his older brother's friend. So we all go to Comiskey, and not all of us Cub fans, by the way, just went. We did not go for the baseball. We went for the Disco Demolition. We went. We had theater. We had seats in the upper deck. Got in for 98 cents. And the atmosphere, I gotta say, was pretty crazy from the get-go. We got there about two innings into the first game. And it wasn't packed at that point. It was not packed at that point. So we got there two, maybe three innings into the first game. But the vibe was weird. From the moment we got in there, there was just a lot of weird tension. Everybody was high. Everybody was drinking. It was just, and it was just a bunch of white, long-haired doofuses who smoked pot, were wearing either rock T-shirts or Disco Sucks T-shirts. And it just, the vibe was weird. Clearly, nobody gave a crap about the baseball that was being played. Everybody was partying. Everybody was blowing weed. And everybody was there to see Disco Records explode. And there was a weird, just a weird tension in the air. Oh, look at this. Tom was there. So maybe Tom can confirm some of this stuff. Hey, Tom, you were there?
Yeah, I was. My buddy was on leave from the Navy. I graduated high school in 78.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove down there, and it was on a Dan Ryan expressway. The entire Dan Ryan was carpeted in Disco Records. You could hear them crunching under the tires of the cars. It was a parking lot on the Dan Ryan. You couldn't move. We had warm beers. We're just pulling up next to people saying, hey, you got any cold ones? We can swap you our warm ones for cold ones. We're passing beers back and forth on the Dan Ryan. And then, like you said, the carnival atmosphere there was just insane.
It was crazy. It was crazy.
Like 10 or 15,000 people outside that couldn't get in.
That was the thing, Tom. As the night progressed or the evening progressed, the place started to fill up. Because like I said, I got there like second, third inning of the first game, and it wasn't full. And it looked like, okay, maybe Dahl's not going to pull a giant crowd. Maybe he's not as popular as we thought he was. And then it started to progressively fill up and fill up and fill up until it was jammed. And we were looking, because we were in the upper deck, we were looking outside. Yeah. People were climbing the wall on the outside
climbing
to get in.
On the outside, climbing up the wall.
Yep.
I don't know, somebody was smart enough to bring a rope. I remember a rope being lowered down from outside, hauling people up. I watched one guy fall probably 20-some feet up in the air and bounce off the pavement. He was so stoned, he just got up, you know, walked away. But the funniest thing was my brother brought my youngest sister to the game to see baseball. He had no clue what was going on.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah. So he brings my youngest sister, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, big brother's going to bring the younger sister to the game to see the baseball game. I'm thinking, what were you thinking?
Insane.
You know?
Now,
no clue.
So as it goes on, the first game ends, and the atmosphere at this point when the game is ending, which, again, the Sox lost, by the way. So the energy in the building is pretty much getting out of control. You could just feel it. I could feel
it. Insane.
And everybody, the pot smoke was thick in the air.
It was a cloud.
It was ridiculous. And so then Dahl comes out on a Jeep, and he's in fatigues with a helmet on, makes a speech. He sings Do You Think I'm Disco, which, by the way, was a big hit at that time. It was his parody of Do You Think I'm Sexy. Sung to the tune of Do You Think I'm Sexy, and it was Do You Think I'm Disco. It was an anti-disco song. Sang that, did the thing, did a countdown. The thing blew up, and it blew up, Tom. I don't know if you remember, but God.
They had some explosives, and I don't know what they had, but it was pretty potent. Yeah,
and then everything seemed okay for a little bit. A few people started to get out on the field, and then mayhem. If I remember correctly, it went from 0 to 60 in about 60 seconds. I mean, it was insane. Now, I did not go out on the field. Did you go out on the field, Tom?
No. Not at all. No way was I doing that. And me and my buddy got the hell out of there when we saw the riot police come in with those 3-foot-long batons
that
they used to have.
Right.
And they had German shepherds, and they were wearing full riot gear. And I said, we got to get out of here.
It broke out into a riot. It literally became a riot. Yeah. Now, my friends and I, we stayed for a lot of it. And then slowly started to make our way out. But trying to get back, because we took the L, so trying to get back to the L was insane.
I can imagine.
Absolutely insane. I didn't get home till like, I was, you know, because the game was canceled. Second game was canceled. I didn't get home till almost 10 o'clock.
I don't remember too much after the riot police got in, started coming in. You know, everything was kind of a blur for us at that point because we were kind of the weirdos that were, you know, we were the ones getting all stoned.
And it was, and Tom, it was 37 years ago. So a lot of them.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. That was normal activity for us.
Yeah. Anyhow, you know? All right. All right, Tom. Thanks, man.
No problem.
I appreciate
it. Easy.
There you go. There you go. Tom was there. It was crazy. All right, we got to take a break. Talk a little bit more about Disco Demolition. If you were there, we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 37 years ago it happened. Every day I just feel older and older and older. 37 years ago. Man, oh, man. All right, we're going to take a break. If you want to join in on this, 312-981-7200, talk and text it. So, this is the one song that I like by the Doors. So, and all the Doors fans usually hate that song because of the orchestra. They thought it was like a weird sellout thing with all the horns and strings and stuff in it. It's the only, that's really the only Doors song I like. That's Kathy. Thank you for requesting the Doors on Two for Tuesday. Yeah! You know, I think Two for Tuesday started on The Loop. I think The Loop started Two for Tuesday. So, speaking of The Loop, we're talking about Disco Demolition. Steve Dahl's Disco Demolition took place, God, if you can believe it, 37 years ago tonight. And there is a book that our own Dave Hoekstra co-wrote with Steve Dahl that is out now, available now. We're going to have Dave on the show at some point, documenting that insane night. And it was insane. I was there. It was crazy. And, yeah. There is sort of a dark side to this. The whole Disco Sucks thing became a way for people who were either racist or homophobic to have an avenue to which to express that. There was a disturbing sort of undercurrent to the anti-disco movement of the 70s. Because, you know, for the most part in the 70s, it was, you know, African-Americans and Latinos and the gay culture embraced disco. And it was mostly white guys who listened to rock and hated disco. And there was some ugliness associated with it, you know, and it that has sort of tainted the memory of Disco Demolition. And every time anybody interviews anybody about Disco Demolition, whether it be, you know, the people, the promoters over at the Sox about it, or Steve Dahl himself, the question about racism and homophobia comes up. And I don't think that, you know, the event itself was some sort of anti-gay or racist event. It was an event where a bunch of people who didn't like disco and liked rock, you know, basically got together and blew it up. Now, in terms of Steve Dahl fully admits that he did the whole thing because he was mad that he got fired. That's the entire reason that Disco Demolition happened, and the entire reason that he started the whole anti-disco, disco sucks, you know, like movement, was in response to the fact that DAI fired him. He came to town from Detroit. He was in Detroit. And CBS, who owned DAI, wooed Steve Dahl to come to Chicago. He came to Chicago, moved here, started to do his morning show on DAI, which was a rock station at that time. It was a full-on rock station. His wife, Janet, finally moved into it here to Chicago. They're together now. And the, you know, they finally, like, I think they got a house. They move in together. Everything is settled in August. They changed format in December. So in less than a year, he picked up his entire, well, he didn't have a whole family at that point. He had a wife, picked up everything, moved to Chicago, hired by DAI. And this is what happens in the radio business all the time, man. They switch formats. Months later, they're a disco station. Dahl gets fired, and then he eventually gets hired by The Loop and held this grudge. And he's fully admitted this. I mean, the whole Disco Demolition thing, the anti-disco thing, came because he was so angry about being fired by DAI. And that's where it all came from. And he was 24 years old, by the way. He was only 24 years old when he did this. So was it a little reckless? Yeah. Was it absolutely immature? Certainly. Was it racist and homophobic? No. It was just a 24-year-old guy who was mad that he moved from Detroit to Chicago and then got fired. That's essentially the reason that Disco Demolition happened, was because of that. And it was all put together by a 24-year-old goof who didn't know he was as popular as he was. It's just a crazy story. It's completely crazy. Here's Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, you know, the phone number for The Loop is 591-ROCK and 591-ROLL.
That's right.
You know, Steve Dahl made that phone number.
Oh, he did. It was his idea.
That was his idea.
Okay. I'm not surprised.
Hey, another thing. The DAI, that was Disco DAI. Was that 95.5?
No. Wait a minute. I don't remember. I know 95.5 was MET.
Yeah, the Mets.
Yeah, DAI. Man, I don't know what was Dan. Can you find out what the broadcast was on the DAI? Because I know that MET was 95.5. That was WMET, but DAI may have became MET. I don't remember specifically. But we'll find out.
Once again, we're getting old.
Yeah, we are, man. Okay, Steve, thanks.
All right, take care. Right.
Yeah, 37 years ago. Let's see.
Bob reports it's 94.7 DAI.
94.7 was DAI. Okay. All right. So that's the drive now, right? No. Is that the drive now? I don't know.
No, the drive's 97.1.
97.1, okay. What's 94.7
is oldies, I believe.
Oldies? Okay. So 94.7 was DAI. There you go. So and then 95.5 was MET. So it was DAI, they went to disco, MET was rock, and the loop was rock. This was before CKG came along. Yeah, man! Classic rock! 630 area code says, remember all the stop signs that were painted stop and then the word disco was painted on it? Yeah, man! Clever! 262 says, wasn't the promotion Mike Vec's idea and Dahl gets all the blame? Well, Mike Vec okayed it. It was Dahl's idea. Mike Vec okayed it. And together, you know, they were like, yeah, let's do this. It sounds like a great idea. Vec got his share. I'm telling you, Vec got his share of blame. He did. I think for a while he had a hard time getting a job in Major League Baseball after that. And I think he now just works for minor league teams. But I know he caught some hell for it. 773 area code says, it would be fun if you did a special Fly Jams Friday disco edition. We do a lot of disco songs on Fly Jams Friday already. don't we? I mean, we do. There's a lot. I mean, every week there's at least 5-6 disco songs we play. So, all right, we got a break. We got the news coming up. We'll talk a little bit more about these bad promotion ideas. Then we're going to talk game night stuff. And then Esmeralda and I are going to go head to head in a classic battle of VH1 pop-up vidya. All right, news is next. News in 15 seconds, exactly. Jams. Rush rules.
Well, the loop always had that thing, no more Rush.
They had what?
They had those big ads. Do you ever remember seeing them?
Now More Rush?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said No More Rush. I was going to say,
no.
Wait a second.
No.
Are you kidding me?
More Rush. More.
630 area code wanted More Rush. Yeah. Two for Tuesday, so that means we'll get to hear one more Rush jam. Boy, this really does sound like it's the loop in 1979. The Doors and Rush? Yeah, man. So that was the ad campaign. Was like, yeah, we're gonna get a ton more listeners because we're gonna say we're gonna play more Rush.
Yeah, you don't remember seeing those just huge billboards?
Then it was a picture of Rush.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
And then yeah, now more Rush, the loop.
Oh, you have to enjoy that. That's a good thing. It's always a good thing. More Rush. Yeah. Yeah, I am still, you know, as much as I love Rush, one of the first memories that comes into my mind is a guy puking on my leg. That's always one of the first things that comes into mind. The Moving Pictures concert tour, guy pukes on my leg. Look down at him. He goes, sorry, dude, I lost it. Yes, you did, on my leg and into my shoe, jerk. All right. So we were talking about Disco Demolition, and if you remember it and then, you know, you want to jump in or where you were at it or any of that stuff, 312-981-7200. You can also text in your choices for two for Tuesday. Yeah. Some people maintain that Disco Demolition was a pretty bad idea for a promotion. It turned out that way because it turned into a riot. They had to cancel the second game, and the Sox actually forfeited. And it's really, in the world of sports, considered an embarrassment. Here are some other promotions. Let's see. Fort Myers Miracle, Scientology Night. The minor league team planned to charge $5 to get into the game and $50,000 to get out. But the event failed to take off due to lack of focus and interest. The plan was to have images of videos of Tom Cruise, and other famous Scientologists entertaining fans throughout the stadium, but people seem more interested in the Dave Matthews tribute band that was scheduled to play after the game. And it wasn't even Dave Matthews. It was a Dave Matthews tribute band. How about this? The Cleveland Indians logo history fleece blanket. Not a good idea. Not a good idea to have a blanket, to give out blankets at an Indians game. That is not a good idea. The Indians name is generic enough to be inoffensive, I suppose, but their logo certainly is borderline at best. The current logo is a toned-down version of its previous iteration. You'd think the Indians franchise would want to hide it. Instead, they gave away blankets showing the full history of the Indians logo in its glory. So in addition to giving out blankets, they showed the history of its offensive logo on the blankets. That's bad, man. The Fresno Grizzlies had Kevin Federline night. Oh. Well, what does that mean? Did every woman gets pregnant? Is that what happens if you go to That name sounds oddly familiar, doesn't it? It's because Kevin Federline, or K-Fed, as he preferred to be called, was married to Britney Spears for about 20 minutes in the mid-2000s. For some reason, the Fresno Grizzlies, the AAA affiliate for the San Francisco Giants, decided to host a K-Fed night in 2006 to honor Fresno native Kevin Federline. The night began with a temporary tattoo giveaway. Fans were entertained by a highlight reel of K-Fed's career. Oh, man. That's terrible. Poor K-Fed. He only tried to have fun. Whatever happened to him? Is that a guy ever surface anymore? Kevin Federline, does he ever pop up?
The last time I remember seeing him, I think he was trying to lose weight on one of those celebrity weight loss shows.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He was Kevin Federline.
Yeah.
That's right. I wonder if he lost that weight. I'm concerned about K-Fed. Can we find out what's going on with K-Fed?
In 2008, he was linked to former volleyball player Victoria Prince. The two were on the same recreational bowling team called the Party Animals.
Wait, they were on the same bowling team?
They welcomed a daughter named Jordan Kay on August 15th.
Of course they did.
Eventually got married in 2013.
Uh-huh.
And now have a second daughter named Peyton Marie.
Oh, good for him. I'm glad they were on the bowling team together. How about the West Michigan Whitecaps cash-money drop night? The West Michigan Whitecaps, an affiliate of the Detroit Tigers, decided to hold a cash-money drop after their game against the South Michigan Devil Rays. Basically, a helicopter flies over the field, drops about $1,000 in cash, mostly in singles, and then a bunch of kids are let loose to grab as much money as they can. As anyone except for the Whitecaps promotional staff could predict, the kids started going crazy and trampling each other, and eventually a 7-year-old boy and a 7-year-old girl were sent to the hospital with injuries sustained in the scramble.
I mean, kids are brutal when it comes to candy. And
yeah.
Pinata. I couldn't imagine money on the ground.
That's just a bad idea in general. Just bad. God. You know, we were talking on the way, and Dan and I were talking on the way, and I didn't get that. I was sleeping because I didn't get to see the Home Run Derby. And I was telling Dan that one of my favorite things in the Home Run Derby every year at the All-Star Game are the kids who are out in the field to shag the balls that don't make it out. You said one kid made a pretty spectacular catch, right?
Yeah, like the first guy that came up, the third or fourth ball hit, this kid made a diving catch in center field. It's like, oh, good
now, for you, kid. Tell everybody, you're talking about bad ideas. We're talking about bad promotions. Tell everybody about the addition of a DJ.
Oh, yeah, so to quote-unquote amp up the players, they put this guy like in the – originally he was at second base. I'm like, oh, that dude's going to get smacked because like not only was he just standing on a riser surrounded by DJ equipment, but they had like – built one of those walls of TVs with the guys' names on it so it would change as they were going along. I'm like, oh,
this
bad spot.
On second base.
I was on second base. And then, like, by the time it got started, they had moved him. But they moved him to right field. So the guy almost, like, the guy had to duck, like, 10 pitches in. It
That's hysterical.
Crazy.
That's great. Oh, wait a minute. Jeff was at Disco Demolition 37 years ago tonight. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right, man.
Yeah, I was in the right field upper deck.
Okay.
And like you, I remember looking on and seeing all the people outside. That was really something else. But there were also occasional records getting tossed on the field and cherry bombs and M80s, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, at the players. They were, like, whipping records at the players. And there were cherry bombs and beers being thrown all over the place. If I remember correctly, Dahl was, like, soaked. Like, people were throwing – like, Dahl was soaked in beer. So,
I was a little bit late to work the next day, and my friend that was there with me told everybody that that was me sliding down the foul pole.
And that wasn't you sliding down the fly pole.
It wasn't, but it was made for a good story at work.
Yeah. Now, you didn't go on the field, did you, Jeff?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I stayed on the upper deck.
Yeah, I just watched the mayhem. It was insane.
There was like a little fire that started in the upper deck for a minute there.
Yeah, there was a fire. Yeah, no, there was a fire. You were in, you said right field?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there was a fire in left field, too, if I remember correctly. There was a fire in the left field upper deck as well. There were two fires on the field.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it was insane. All right, thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
It was crazy. Esmeralda, if you could have been there, you would have been like, get me the hell out of here now.
Well, maybe.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Sometimes
it was pretty scary.
You get to run out on the field?
Yeah, and then get arrested.
I mean, if you ran fast enough.
Yeah. Well, when they brought in the riot gear and dogs and stuff, that's when it was like, time to go.
So wait, when did you leave?
When we saw the riot gear coming in, we were like, maybe we should make our way out. And it took us a long time to get out. And then, like, you can't imagine trying to get to the red line at that point, which at that time was called the Lake Dan Ryan. That was not the red line. It was the Lake Dan Ryan. So we tried to make our way. And, I mean, you know how it is to be on a train when there's, like, a Cub game or something.
Right.
Oh, man. Imagine that times 90 with pot, you know, and cherry bombs. So there you go.
Wait, on the train or just on the way?
On the train, outside, everywhere. It's 1979, Esmeralda. Nobody gave a crap about anything. Except for Zeppelin. That's the only thing people cared about back then was Zeppelin. The only unifying thing.
They should have brought Zeppelin in.
They should have.
Instead of the cops.
They just start playing Zeppelin, and everybody just goes, oh, all right, man. Let's not blow stuff up anymore, man. Zeppelin's playing. This is good. I remember I went to go see Ted Nugent. It was, what was it? Journey, Ted Nugent, and Leonard Skinner, and 38 Special. It was like the Super Bowl of rock. Yeah, man. The Super Bowl of rock. And it was at Soldier Field, and it was about 900 degrees that day. It was ridiculously hot, and I remember the crowd was getting restless and rowdy, and they started playing Kashmir over the PA, and everybody was just like, oh man, yeah. Everybody was, because Physical Graffiti had just come out. Physical Graffiti was a new release. That's how old I am. Physical Graffiti was a new release, and they played Kashmir, and everybody went, oh. As soon as that started, everybody was like, let's forget about our differences in the heat and enjoy some Zeppelin. Zeppelin is the unifier, man. Right, here's a song you don't hear very often on Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. Overture. 630 requested Rush for Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. Tuesday meaning two. Coming up, Esmeralda and I are going to go head-to-head in yet another unbelievably exciting VH1 pop-up Vidya battle. Esmeralda, are you ready to go to battle in a little bit?
Yes.
Wow. You sound very, very ready. this edition of VH1's pop-up video game is dedicated to K-Fed. It's K-Fed.
He'll appreciate that.
He will. All right, we're talking about more. Disco Demolition happened, if you can believe this. Disco Demolition happened 37 years ago tonight. I was there. I was just telling some of the stories. If you remember it or you were there and you want to text in some stuff or call in, it's 312-981-7200. And as a result, we're talking about bad ideas for promotions. The cash money drop, the K-Fed night. Here's another one. West Virginia Power and their salute to indoor plumbing. The team, wanting to point out the greatness of indoor plumbing, originally planned to shut down all of the bathrooms in the stadium and force the paying fans only to use porta-potties. What the hell?
This is a Cubs game?
No. As you might suspect, there was a massive health code violation, so that did not happen. The Power still managed to create a plumber's atmosphere by holding a toilet seat toss. And then mashing up brownies into little patties and having a poo toss on the field. That's fantastic. A toilet seat toss and a poo toss. Oddly, that also was, they did that on K-Fed night, oddly. All right. Now, here's one. The Los Angeles Dodgers had a free baseball night. This is not a good idea. In theory, giving each fan a free baseball is a great idea. Every fan comes to the ballpark hoping to catch a foul ball, so why not give them one when they walk through the gate? Unfortunately, when your team is playing poorly, a free baseball can turn into a free missile to launch at opposing players. And that's exactly what happened. At Dodger Stadium in 1995, the Dodgers were forced to forfeit their game against the St. Louis Cardinals when fans began launching a barrage of baseballs onto the field for the third time during the game. It was the first forfeit in the National League in 40 years. Ironically, not one fan went home with a baseball on ball night. So this reminded Dan of what happened on my show some years ago. If I remember correctly, it was a Steve Krakow was on with us, and we were doing a secret history of Chicago music. And the band Chicago came up. And we were talking about Chicago, and unbeknownst to me, Jeff Garlin, who is currently the star of The Goldbergs and Curb Your Enthusiasm, was listening to the show and called in and told a magnificent story. About, well, first of all, he called in to talk about Chicago because he, evidently, Jeff Garlin is a massive Chicago fan and called in to correct us about a few things that we were saying about Peter Cetera and whatever. So that part of the thing was great. But then he started to tell a story about how Kid Rock was at the park one time and so was Peter Cetera. And how much of this conversation do we have? Dan?
Unfortunately, it's a longer one, so I don't think we've got the tail end about the baseball, but we don't have the part about the actual singing.
The actual singing of the, okay. Well, anyway, it ended with what happens is at when you sing the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley Field, which I've done, actually, they give you a jersey with your name on it. And I do want to preface this with an asterisk. I did sing the national anthem along, or not the national anthem, God. Take Me Out to the Ball Game, along with Patty Vasquez and Pete McMurray, who used to work here. So, but the mic didn't work. So that of course, happened. The one time I go up to sing the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley Field, the damn mic doesn't work. But I don't care. It was still incredible, and it was awesome. So anyway, they give you a case of balls to sign, like a box filled with baseballs. And then you autograph them. So they did that for us. We signed all the balls and everything. They give you a box of balls. So Kid Rock sang the seventh inning stretch. For some reason, they told Jeff Garlin, why don't you hang out with Kid Rock and show him the ropes? And I don't know if we've got the whole thing somewhere that we can play at sometime, because it's an incredibly funny story. It's one of the funniest stories ever. So he tells this whole story about Kid Rock being an idiot, and then it goes into the point where, at this point, they've given Kid Rock his jersey, and they've given Kid Rock the case of baseballs to sign. So this is where the story takes off into tying in with that Los Angeles Dodgers unfortunate promotion. Here we go.
So anyhow, we're sitting on the box. So Moises Alou and Alfonseca are getting in a fight, an argument with the umpire.
Okay.
And the crowd is, it's like gone on for a while, and the crowd is throwing things, and people are booing. They're getting very restless. All of a sudden, a baseball almost hits the umpire, and I'm sitting there going, I go, that's too far. Man, why would somebody hit? And I think to myself, oh, no. I turn around. I say, I see his friend. I go, did he? He goes, yep. What happens is when you sing the seventh inning stretch, the Cubs give you a box of small box of baseballs to sign. He had the box of baseballs in his lap. He's laughing to himself, saying, literally, let's get some lunch. And then he took another ball and threw it again. I couldn't believe it. The Cubs knew where the balls were coming from, and they came, and they gently, you know, said, they said, like, they, he's stupid. They go, kid, you know, it's going to get a little crazy at the ninth inning, and you're going to have trouble getting out of here. Maybe you want to go now. I'll go now. Because he is just, I mean, he threw up a Waffle House recently. What an idiot.
Yeah, I know. But so let me, so I'm still, did you ever find out why they suggested you hang with him?
Well, no, it was just sort of like, I did it. I've done it, I've done it like four or five times.
Right, and you're from here.
And I've done it, like, I did it like two or three times.
Right.
And the friend thought, since I've done it, I can explain it to him and make him, you know, it wasn't like, oh, you and kid will get along so good.
Wow. All right.
Ham in common.
Wow, that's amazing. Jeff Garland, everybody.
Yeah. That was hilarious. And he just called out of nowhere during that. But the entire story is magnificent. The entire story about Kid Rock. And Peter Cetera leaving because he got scared. Like, Peter Cetera from Chicago was just like, from the band Chicago, was like gone. He's just like took off because Kid Rock is like swearing and screaming and stuff. Yeah, so not a good idea to give away balls on ball day. Yeah. But I got to say, I really do think 10-cent beer night is probably... Even worse than Disco Demolition. 10-cent beer night in Cleveland. And that, by the way, was when they had, when they shared the stadium with the Browns. You know what? You know, that was at that time. So it was this massive, huge stadium. And and just like stuff getting thrown and everything. And the place was packed because there was the promise of 10-cent beer. So here you've got basically a football stadium filled with people drunk after drinking, well, basically what, $3 worth of beer will get you completely annihilated, right? I mean, so not a good idea. Not a good idea. But yeah, Disco Demolition was, it was something, man. It was something. It's hard to believe that was 37 years ago.
Little known fact.
Yeah.
NBC newscaster Tim Russert was in attendance at 10-cent beer night.
Whoa, he was?
NBC newscaster Tim Russert, then a student at Cleveland Marshall College of Law, attended the game. A quote from Russert, I went with $2 in my pocket. You can do the math.
Tim Russert.
One of the players on the field was Rusty Torres, who is the only known other player to also be in attendance at Disco Demolition Night.
Wow! He was at both of those? Was he on the Tigers at the time in 79 then? Or no, maybe he was on the Tigers. Was it a Tigers game against Cleveland as well?
It says here that he was with the White Sox at that point.
Oh, so it was a Sox and Indians.
He was an Indian at the time for 10-cent beer night and then Sox.
That's great. I bet every team would never want that guy on. If we get that guy on our team, inevitably we're going to have a really horrible promotion night. Because it's a kiss of death. All right, we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next, and Esmeralda and I are going to go head-to-head, and we're just going to go nuts and start whipping chairs. Right, Esmeralda? Flipping tables and stuff?
Who can throw the chair the farthest?
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. News is next.